What number defines poverty? From Marketplace, I'm David Brancaccio. At the United Nations General Assembly meeting in New York this week, there's a new list of goals, and ridding the world of extreme poverty by the year 2030 is goal number one. And the World Bank, which sets the benchmark global poverty line, is expected to shift that line soon. In 1990, the World Bank first set the definition at a dollar a day. It's now $1.25, but in early October, the bank is likely to raise it to define extreme poverty as living on $1.90. a day, Marketplace's Noel King reports.
The global poverty line isn't an exact measure, but it does have influence. Abhijit Banerjee is a professor of economics at MIT. He says it helps set public policy.
Countries seem to be taking the view that people below this particular level, that's not acceptable, so let's do something about that. It was meant to be actionable.
So why is the World Bank raising the line? Valerie Kozel is a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She worked on poverty for the World Bank.
It's an effort to keep a global poverty line contemporary, to make sure it reflects conditions today.
Living standards are changing. She says 30 years ago, poverty meant not having enough food. It's different today. She's done a lot of research in Asia.
Poor people in Vietnam, many of them have cell phones, motorcycles, and television.
She says they're still poor because today those things are as necessary as food. I'm Noel King for Marketplace.
A big change at Google could upend the online advertising industry. Google is acknowledging that more than half of the ads on the web just aren't viewed, hidden behind browser tabs, scrolled out of view, or snuffed out by ad blockers. So Google will charge advertisers only for the ads that are really visible. Marketplace's senior tech correspondent Molly Wood.
This is a potentially massive move. Almost no one else can guarantee 100% ad viewability. It's something that only Google can pull off because of its inventory, and it's just a ground-shaking change for the industry. I suspect that over time, it could put entire companies out of business, and it absolutely shakes up the way that Google itself sells advertising. If advertisers respond to it, it could bring them a dramatic amount of new business. It's also the kind of thing that only Google can do, and it's a pretty bold move. You can imagine them sitting around a table saying, the ad industry is in trouble. People are worried about fraud, they're worried about ad blockers, they're worried that advertising is not going to be viable. And Google has basically said, look, we're a safe harbor in a pretty crazy storm.
Marketplace's Molly Wood. The time frame for this change, Google says soon. Big news study about gender in the workplace. 30,000 people surveyed by the consulting firm McKinsey and Lean In, the organization of Sheryl Sandberg of Facebook fame. The Wall Street Journal explored the data as part of a special section this week about women in the workplace. Rebecca Blumenstein is the deputy editor-in-chief at the journal. Ms. Blumenstein, good morning.
Thanks for having me.
Now, the study finds that women aren't less ambitious or less confident, but many women say they'd rather not have these top executive positions in the companies. What do you think is going on here?
Well, it's quite interesting. I mean, women and men start out kind of equally ambitious. Unfortunately, what happens at every step along the way, women's ambition eases a bit and men's stays quite strong. But I think it's important here not to blame the woman. For a long time, we've felt that the reason women stall out is because of families and children. And the research say that actually having a family makes women and men more ambitious. You have children, you need to focus on your income. Also, once women get into companies, increasingly, they're kind of shuttled into what we call these staff jobs instead of the line jobs that most frequently lead to the C-suite level.
Now, this is a survey of not just women, but also men. And it sounds like both genders feel very often that taking time off for whatever reason is going to hurt their career.
A lot of companies today have flexible leaves, but really, there's a stigma to it. Our survey showed that only 12% participation in many of these programs, and employees feel that they're going to be penalized if they take part in it. One of the companies in our special report this week, Price Waterhouse, they figured out that something that was holding women back is that if they took any sort of leave from the company, they couldn't get a top ranking in their performance review. So they eliminated that detail, and they are now finding a 98% return from maternity leave.
Wait, Rebecca, let me get this straight. The old way at Pricewaterhouse was that you couldn't get the highest performance review rating if you had availed yourself of the company's policy of being able to take some time off?
Well, there was a small chance, but under the revamp policy, staffers with a protracted time off get performance reviews, but no longer find themselves compared with colleagues who remained on the job for the whole year. And that shift has really helped them.
What do we know about companies that are having success with more women at higher levels? What are they doing differently?
There seems to be a general pattern that companies that are doing well have a commitment from the top and CEOs who are not only talking about it, but actually walking the walk. Brian Moynihan at Bank of America actually sits on the diversity committee. It's a position he held before he became CEO, and he still holds it. He held on to it. Salesforce has actually ordered a review of pay for the entire company of 16,000 to make sure that there aren't disparities in pay, and they've been adjusting some salaries.
Rebecca Blumenstein is deputy editor-in-chief of The Wall Street Journal. Ms. Blumenstein, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And before we go, the confectionery store in Germany, where they make your candy using a 3D printer. The system's developed by the candy company Katjes. Fruit gum candy, they're starting with. It's seen as the thin end of the wedge that could have us eating all sorts of 3D-printed food someday. Well, I've been kind of 3D printing pasta noodles for years. You put the semolina dough in, you press the plunger, and out it squeezes. From Montclair State University in New Jersey today, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.